Hello, hello. All right, sorry about that, my friend. Are we back in business?
Yeah, yeah.
Sweet. Yeah, they shut off the power real quick. But I feel like America has a good enough foundation of freedom that they're not going to be able to take us out back and shoot us, no matter how bad they want to or have how many sodomites they get.
No, it's a metaphor. They will not take you out and shoot you, but they will shut you down. We're at a crucial moment here, because what we're seeing here is the attempt to mainstream sodomy. Look at the mayor of Chicago is now a lesbian. The attorney general in Michigan is now a lesbian. What we're seeing here is this is a protected class of janissaries or eunuchs that are supposed to rule over us all. You can see it.
It's true. It's like it's a sterilization. And that's old one pre-1969 versus mass of Paul VI, current mainstream.
What's the question?
What do you prefer? What mass do you think is more traditionally Catholic? And is there a reason that it's changed?
I think that one of the most destructive things you can get into is making invidious comparisons between two kinds of mass. I have avoided this for 40 years now. There are always people who are trying to drag me into some type of statement that if only the mass were still in Latin, we wouldn't have any of the problems that we have now.
Right.
That's just fantasy. That's fantasy.
Yeah. You have to have we had a Latin mass, and I never liked it because I didn't understand it. I think if you have a certain education in Latin, which we're going to homeschool our kids and teach them Latin and stuff like that, I think, you know, it's just based on can you transfer Logos to your kids or not? You know, I'm like you. I don't like getting trapped in these little technical nonsense questions. Cool. Is there anything else you want to talk about? Is there a reason that NASA became so deceptive? Do you have, I know this is totally has nothing to do with Pete Buttigieg, but like, why did they push this space bullshit on all of us? Is that a way to try and destroy our connection to Logos?
No, I think that we were shocked in 1957 when the Soviet Union launched a satellite called Sputnik. And it just suddenly shocked everybody, realized that they were ahead of us technologically. The Russians are still ahead of us technologically when it comes to rockets. We have to buy rockets from the Russians because we don't produce good stuff anymore, because we just don't have the skills that the Russians have. So I think that's what led to that whole thing, and then the desire to catch up. I was subjected – this is basically Sputnik wrecked my education, okay, because Sputnik convinced me that I had to study chemistry and physics and biology. I love biology. I won the biology medal at a prestigious prep school in Philadelphia, but I should have been studying Latin and Greek. The biggest mistake of my life is that I didn't go to the Jesuit prep school in Philadelphia and get 5 hours a week of Latin and 5 hours a week of Greek. I did have some Latin and I had some Greek, enough to get me started, but I just regret that I didn't spend that time more profitably.
And you're obviously a very intelligent person, but one thing I've noticed about you is your ability to recall names. Do you have any advice on how you do that, or is it just simply you have a very fast processor?
No, it's a question of understanding connections.
Right.
If you have a coherent picture of the universe, then everything fits into a certain place and you know where it is. It's like having an organized garage or something like that, you know? You know where the toolbox is, you know where everything's organized. So the point here is to have a coherent understanding of the big picture. And that way, all these facts fit into slots and they're easy to access.
Yeah, because that's what I think part of the IQ differences are, does someone have an order to their mind? Because public school is aimed, I believe, to absolutely destroy any coherent thought at all. And I think what saved my mind was music. That with those 12 notes and with the order of music, you figure out how to think and how to put different songs together and blend songs. And from there, you can see the world for what it is and not as just chaotic nonsense.
That's right. There is an order to music. The daughter of those two ballet dancers she's two, three years old, something like that. She understands music completely. She understands the logos of music. She understands that there's a drama here, there's an order here, and she can't read, she can't write. I mean, she's too young to that. The mind can perceive that order because music is kind of pre-rational. It's pre-writing, pre-cognitive, pre-philosophical. It's the preparation for that because it gives you a sense that there is an order. You know, you start off with a certain note, and then you go through this big struggle, you know, and you think, is it going to work out? And then finally you get back to that note, and you think, I feel relieved.
Yeah, it's a hero's journey. It really, you can create it, you know, like this, you feel the pull of this. It's resolution. And with that, you see God. I know that sounds a little insane, but there's no other way to do that. And then that's why the Jews invented jazz to fuck with it.
I think the story, it's in Dionysus Rising, but basically George Antheil said that if we had to listen to one more piece by Schoenberg, we all would have committed suicide.
it's so true. And now we have house music that's just regurgitation of nonsense. It's in order. It's to destroy logos. It really is. It's like
it was an assault on logos. The beginning, Schoenberg got it from Wagner. Wagner was a genius, but he attacked logos with Tristan and Isolde because he wanted to screw who he wanted to screw.
Yeah, it's so similar to Hitler. It's like he has enough order to do something, but then he overextends. Like Wagner's Ring Cycle is like 14 hours long. That's almost metaphorical to like, stay the hell out of Russia, Hitler. You've had enough.
I was at Berchtesgaden. And it leads you, when you're up on top of that mountain, it gives you delusions of grandeur because right. You can see into Austria and think, well, what the hell? I can see into Austria. let's annex Austria.
Right.
And then there's Poland. Let's do that. It's part of standing on top of that mountain. But also the scenario, the music background is Wagner for that type of scenery. The Götterdämmerung, the Ride of the Valkyries.
Right.
But I have to say, I think that Das Rheingold is one of the most brilliant pieces of music ever written because it's the mythic understanding of capitalism. It is the most brilliant understanding of capitalism that there is, the beginning of Das Rheingold.
I got to check that out. You know, I really like Shostakovich. I think that, I don't know if you know any history behind that guy, but that guy would make some of the most beautiful sounding music I'd ever heard, and then somehow he managed to do that under the Iron Curtain of the Bolsheviks. I don't know how that happened.
Stalin saved him. He was heading toward 12 tone, and Stalin didn't like it, and so we have Stalin to thank because he did one more piece like Schoenberg. They would have put him in the gulag.
That's amazing.
So he pulled back and he did the Fifth Symphony, and the Fifth Symphony is one of those brilliant pieces of music where you hear it the first time and you just stop and you think, I this is brilliant. I understand what's going on here. This is powerful. This is exactly the sense I had. I had that with when I heard the first time I heard the Pilgrim Chorus from Tannhäuser. I thought, this is powerful. This is powerful. I understand. I have a feeling something big is happening here. Something important is happening here, and I need to pay attention. That's exactly the feeling that I had with Shostakovich when I heard the Fifth Symphony.
Yeah, I got to hear that in Austria, and it blew my mind. I always liked Mozart, like the Magic Flute, but now that I understand Subversion, like I don't know what's going on. Like I don't trust words like magic and flute these days. Is it was he trying to pull something with the Magic Flute?
It's Masonic. It's a Masonic opera.
Right. There's
so the Queen of the Night is the Catholic Church, and it ends with Sarastro thing. The final aria, Die strahlende Sonne vertreiben die Nacht. That's the Enlightenment. Okay, the rays of the sun are going to drive away the night. So it's a celebration of the Enlightenment and Freemasonry and an attack on the Catholic Church.
Yeah, I knew there's something off about it because I love like the some of those arias are beautiful, but it feels a little off these days now that I know that there really is these subversive pushes. What about, was Moonlight Sonata, did he know that we were not actually going to go to the moon and he was trying and Beethoven was trying to tell everybody? Why does the moon make people insane? I know I'm all over the map here, but
that's called lunacy. That's where we get the word lunacy.
It's very rare that I get to talk to someone that understands classical music and calls out some of this stuff. Okay, Moonlight Sonata is absolutely beautiful. What was the cause of that? Was there political implications? What was that all about?
Well, you've got people who are living in Germany at the time of Napoleon. I mean, Hegel and Beethoven were practically contemporaries, and I'm studying Hegel right now, and Hegel is a guy who's in the Lutheran seminary. He's 19 years old, studying Lutheran theology, and the French Revolution breaks out. And so you've got these two competing paradigms here. Is it traditional Catholicism? Lutheranism is not really traditional Catholicism, but it's, traditional Christianity, or is it the Enlightenment? And Hegel was a genius. Beethoven was a genius, and he tried to put these things together. So you have like the Fifth Symphony, where it's threatening to get out of control. It's really threatening to get out of control, but he finally, with this kind of Promethean will, drags it back down, and we're back down to where we started again. And so the mind has asserted hegemony over all of these passions. You can still do it. The problem with Wagner is, with Tristan and Isolde, he sailed off, and he never came back again. Yep. You left the shore. You never came back to that note that you started on. This is like, I've done this on the St. Joe River. I row on the St. Joe River. And I've rowed up to Mishawaka. It's 3 miles away. And suddenly the thunderstorm rolls in. It's like Beethoven's Sixth Symphony. It's exactly like Beethoven's Sixth Symphony. And I'm scared. I think I'm going to die.
Like, dun, 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 dun.
That's the seventh. But the sixth symphony is the walk in nature.
Okay.
Da 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 da. There's a thunderstorm in the middle of the sixth symphony, and I've experienced this on the St. Joe River, where you start off from the dock, and now you're halfway there, and I'm going to die. I'm going to get hit by lightning, and then you make it back, and you have this cathartic sense: I've been through something. I survived. Reason asserted its hegemony over chaos. It's cathartic. I feel better. That's exactly what I'm talking about here.
And people forget that Moonlight Sonata also has that. You know, like that. There's this journey in these. I love Vivaldi's Winter is like that. Like there's that build and then the madness and then the resolution, and. And when you're not given that as the listener, it does take you out of the natural law. And it does, it's absolutely political. And I think with a lot of like hip hop and a lot of the modern rock, it's intentionally void of any meaning.
There's no musical meaning here. There's no logos here.
Exactly.
It doesn't go anywhere. The diatonic scale has drama programmed into it. There are different intervals, and what we're talking about is a beginning, a middle, and an end. And after you've had that, that music is cathartic. I realized after reading Aristotle's Poetics, I kept trying to apply it to drama. It applies better to music.
Yeah.
And then I realized, wait a minute, well, those dramas had music involved in them. So there was music playing at the same time. That's the cathartic moment. You have been taken on an experience, an emotional experience, and you've been treated well. In other words, you put yourself in this guy's hands. The guy leads you into something that you would not have gotten into on your own, and then he brings you back, and you're a better man because you went through that experience.
Yeah, and then you have Eminem's 8 Mile, and you also have Jaws. Both use the half step of being cornered and fright. Like this, same with 8 Mile. That's just to evoke an unresolvable anxiety and fear, and it's absolutely a subversive tool to keep people broken, essentially, and scared.
Yeah. And well, I was in a rock band in Germany in the 70s, and the only guy who had talent was my friend, who went on to study at the Robert Schumann Institute, and they taught him 12-tone. They never mentioned Bach, but they taught him 12-tone music.
Bach is order. But how do you feel? What makes Paco Bell so good? Because it doesn't have... I've described Paco Bell as a great marriage in that it has the part that's never going to change, but then you have it starts with just the scale, and then it evolves to... And it always keeps coming back to that base of just the thing that you know and is beautiful, and I think that's why it's so associated with marriage. And I don't know, what's your thoughts on that?
It's the two parts kind of come together. They're different. That's the whole point. It has to be different to be a marriage.
Right.
You can't marry another guy because the guys are not different.
Yeah.
It has to be a union of two opposites leading to a synthesis of a third person.
Right.
That's what life is.
Man, that's so beautiful. Yeah, and like Mozart's masonry, it almost just seems like he's showing off and he just wants to lollygag around a feel. Like this type of... There's no drama in it. Like with this whole like... Like it's just lollygagging. And that's...
But he's a genius. I mean, he has so much talent. He could toss something like that off, and it's kind of like a joy just to listen to the virtuosity. That's part of music, too. That's part of what dance is, too. Part of you is just rejoicing in the virtuosity of a guy who can jump that high or pick up that girl. My son did a one-handed lift. He's holding the ballerina up with one hand. You know, everybody was stunned when he did that. That's part of the virtuosity. But the ballet, if you come to Sleeping Beauty and Carabas tries to kill the baby and the lilac fairy holds up her hand. It's crazy. I cannot talk about that without getting emotional. And it all is a simple gesture. She simply held up her hand.
It's beautiful, man.
To protect the baby. I cannot talk about it without getting emotional. And it's just such a simple gesture.
But like your son holding someone up with one hand isn't lollygagging. That's amazing.
No, that shows you the opposites of virile men and feminine women. That's what ballet is. That's why two homosexuals cannot get married. That's why it's boring.
And two heterosexuals living sterile lives. I've heard you talk about how the ballet was ruined by that. It's like there should be that tension for making life that results in pregnancy. You know, thank God for your daughter-in-law. But it's like when you remove that and you just have two of the same thing, when you have women that act like men and men, or it's like women that act manly enough and men that act female enough where they're just basically just these two rabbits just banging forever without any life creation. There's nothing entertaining about that. Like no one wants to, you would not get emotional at anything they did.
No, that's modern ballet. That's exactly what modern ballet is. It's the sex robot dance. Every single ballet is the sex robot dance, and the girl, everybody got tired of it. Nobody could stand it anymore. That's why they all got pregnant.
That's amazing. And it's like, that's why no one's ever rooting for these homosexual love stories either. Like Brokeback Mountain was as close as they got, but like no one's ever like, oh, you know, these two lovers are being held apart by fate. I hope they can get together and just anonymously get off in an alley. It just isn't, there's no story there.
No, this is the point. If you read Pete's autobiography, he's got this touching moment where he and his boyfriend go down and they're walking under the gay disco lights at the bridge on the street there. And he says, and we held hands. Well, what, are you kidding me? What the hell were you doing in the gay bar in Chicago holding hands? I mean, this is ridiculous. It's a parody of romance. It's a parody of heterosexual romance, and it's a mockery of marriage, a mockery of heterosexual drama.
Oh yeah, it's all so funny. Is if you disassociate with how horrifyingly destructive it is. Even Brokeback Mountain, it'll trick you into being like, "Oh, that's a cool scene." In reality, it's a guy cheating on his wife with some random dude who just keeps banging a bunch of other dudes in the country. It's about dudes that just can't go camping. It's so dumb and pointless and just soul crushing. But with enough music with Logos in it, they can trick an audience.
You will appreciate this because I wrote a song about Brokeback Mountain when I was playing. So if you'll permit me, I will sing one verse of the song.
I love it, of course.
Come hear my sad story about a cowboy named Rory who expired from sexual practices strange. The gay cowboy Rory got AIDS a posteriori, and now he's no longer at home on the range.
It's so funny. It's just
now, I sang that once. I sang that at the pub, and some guy jumped up and he said, "Do you know any nigger songs?"
That happens to me all the time.
Like, and so he walked out. He walked out, and I turned to everyone. I said, "It must have been a cowboy."
God, that's funny. And it's so interesting how people can see that as romantic. And then the movie 300, which has Honor and Logos in it, they think that's the gay movie just because they have an unnecessary amount of abs, when really that movie is just about a small amount of people standing up to tyranny and there's no gayness about it. It's kind of odd.
Yeah. Yep.
Because there's no movies coming out of Hollywood now with any natural law. I think they snuck in 300 just because of the abs. I think it tricked all the gay executives.
They don't know that they're cutting their throats. They're cutting their throat. Their political correctness is destroying Hollywood. They don't understand that. They don't understand it. There's only something that's some things that are fraught with drama. Some things are not fraught with drama. The diatonic scale is fraught with drama. Heterosexual relationships are fraught with drama. The other stuff is not.
Nothing. I used to do a bit where I'm like, they call gays gays. They should call straights sads. Where the whole joke was that these people have no tension. They just work out, sell real estate, do cocaine, and bang each other. They have nothing to complain about. Like, men and women communicate differently. We want different things out of life. We have different passions and drives and all that stuff. And then you'll see us at a mall just like not like getting in an argument where two gay guys are just giving each other AIDS again.
Yeah. All right.
Go ahead.
This is the consciousness. We've reached this consciousness. Let's see what happens to Pete Buttigieg now.
Okay, where can the people find you? I mean, this has been an unbelievable conversation.
First of all, the Pete Buttigieg ebook and the ebook about the Cincinnati Ballet are both on Kindle. The Cincinnati Ballet is how Meyer Lansky took over the Cincinnati Ballet. The if you go on Amazon Kindle and you type in my name, you'll get all of these ebooks.
Everybody support E. Michael Jones. He's doing he's also hysterical. Someone did write, though, Dr. E. Michael Jones seems like a gin drinker. What's his favorite gin? Mine is Tanqueray gin. I don't know if you're a gin drinker.
Tanqueray. No, he's not a gin drinker. Sorry.
Are you a gin drinker?
No, sorry, I'm not. If I look that way, I apologize.
What's your drink of choice? Because with German Irish heritage, there is no way you don't have a beverage every now and then.
Tea, tea,
tea,
tea. Good Barry's
for,
tea.
Good for you. Yeah, I'm currently drinking.
Anything else? You don't want to be near me.
All right, my friend. Are you down to come back again?
Yeah, I'll be happy to. This is a great, great conversation. We had a real meeting of the minds. I always enjoyed being with you.
Yeah, yeah, and the music conversation. We could do a whole episode just on that. You're the man, so check out. Everybody, check him out. Support him. Spread Logos. Logos is rising. All right, much love, brother. I will talk to you soon. All right, peace.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. E. Michael Jones. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, it's like that dude is a legend. Stalin saved Shostakovich. That's so funny to me. I thought that he was capable of creating that even under Stalin's rule, but Stalin's like, enough with the Jewy noise. Bring it back home. All right, so spread the word that Pete Buttigieg is a little sodomite and he's not going to take down America. How good was that music conversation, right? All right, let me finish off reading these and then I'm going to go hang with the family. Hey, Big Bear, I'm a young Brazilian college student here in SoCal who got reunited with Jesus and trying to bring some logos to Venice, Santa Monica before I go back to my country. Question for Michael. Ah, it's too late. Sorry. What do you think about the current Pope and what do we do about him? Question for you. Can I be verified as Brazilian Bear? Yes. Welcome, Brazilian Bear. I can tell he doesn't like talking about the... He doesn't want to talk shit about the Catholic hierarchy, even though he's one of the ones exposing the problems more accurately and more definitively than anyone alive. But I can just tell he doesn't want to be the guy that you put him in a corner and say, tell everyone why the Pope's a fag. He'd just be like, no. But he's writing the books on how to identify how the Catholic Church got subverted and why it's in such a bad spot. Oh, and it's great to hear his free-form conversation with Dr. Jones. Please remember that the Catholic Church is not defined by its episcopate and shouldn't be judged by it. I hope Dr. Jones would agree. Man, that guy's funny. Can you ask E. Michael Jones what mass he goes to? Oh, yeah, he doesn't want to get pulled into those. All right, so hit like and share. Hugepianist.com. Oh, I'm going to say part two. Subscribe to unauthorized.tv. Dude, how great would it be if it's me, Vox Day, E. Michael Jones, in a buddy comedy with a bad guy? Brokeback Pope. That's pretty funny. Taco Bell, I'll play that for you and then I'll get out of here. Man, it's so cool talking to someone who really understands music. Masculine and the feminine coming together for eternity with struggle. Logos. All right, everybody. Hugepianist.com if you want to support the channel, or unauthorized.tv, become a member there. You can support me and be a member like I used to have on YouTube at the Feed the Bear section. PayPal.me/FeedTheBear. Hit the like button and share it. Share the greatness that is E. Michael Jones, and don't have sterile sex. Don't have sterile sex. All right. Much love, everybody. Be good to each other. Don't be a fag.